Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
From the Quicken Loan Studios in Houston, Texas. Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today. Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, happy holidays and welcome inside the Quicken Loans Studios at the all-new SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Alyssa Walker-Campbell, I am with you on this Friday night and, of course, our encore presentations on Saturday. We've got so much to dive into over the next 2 hours, so you better buckle up because we're going to open up the Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. We're going to discuss the College Football Playoff Committee's rankings. Do you agree? Because the committee has spoken. And which team deserves to be in those top four slots with the final selection when it's going to be out later this week. So we're going to start off with our rock star lineup. Always a true pleasure to welcome in on the Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. That is from ESPN Radio, the great Freddie D. Coleman. Good evening, Freddie. You're a little under the weather. How you doing, my friend?
I'm hanging in there the best I can, but I was not going to turn down the opportunity to speak with you, Alyssa.
Well, you got to get well because, you've got the big birthday coming up on the 19th. You're a Christmas baby, right?
Yeah, 6 days before Christmas, y'all turned 51 years of age, so I definitely want to be better, not only for that, but also for the holiday season, but I'll be better by then.
Oh, my gosh. So it's a little bit of a double dip. No pressure on the lovely Mrs. Coleman.
No.
She's got to load up for you, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, she does a great job with that the other 364 days. So I'm sure she'll take care of me on my birthday. No doubt about that.
Oh. Well, let's get right to it. The latest college football playoff rankings. Do you agree with them? What stands out with you?
I think, I don't know if it's in terms of agreeing or disagreeing, because everything's subjective. The people that are part of the college football playoff committee, they're going to make what they feel is the best judgment in their mind. But it seems to me, Alyssa, that the one thing that I think they've been able to focus on is that they're trying to prove Washington is either worthy of being in a Final Four playoff or not worthy. I think that's been the buzz team. Because as far as I'm concerned, Alabama's going to be in, Ohio State's going to be in, the Clemson wins, they're going to be in.
Uh-huh.
But it seems to me that the committee is looking for more ways to keep Washington out and maybe put either the Big Ten champion in or Michigan back in the Final Four than trying to find ways that Washington should stay in there. And believe me, if they win the Pac-12 championship game, they're going to take care of that. The committee won't be able to keep them out. But I guarantee you, if they lose one of those games, if they lose that championship game, it wouldn't surprise me if three Big Ten teams are part of the Final Four if other things break out the other way.
Okay, so which team do you anticipate will be the biggest threat to Washington to be able to leapfrog them and to get into that number four slot?
That's a really good question, and I'm going to say it's probably Penn State, mainly due to the fact that they beat Ohio State, a team
right.
That's going to be in the Final Four playoff, and even though they lost to Michigan, and I think this is one of the things that really bugs me about their criteria. They talk about how Michigan has three wins over ranked teams, and that's really wrong because the teams they face at times that are ranked now weren't ranked then. So I think if Penn State wins and they beat Wisconsin convincingly as a two-loss team, if Washington loses the Pac-12 championship, they're going to give Penn State that consideration. And I think if Washington even struggles with a good Colorado team, you have to wonder how much of the committee may look at Penn State's win over Wisconsin and giving them more of a boost than Washington beating Colorado in the Pac-12 championship game.
He is back from ESPN Radio, the great Freddie Coleman. And all I have to say is, let's be a bit reflective. I mean, because Freddie, it's amazing just the incredible turnaround that the Big Ten Conference has had in 2016. It really has been a banner year. Could they potentially have, three teams in that top four?
I mean, I would think that it could be too far-fetched, but based on what we've seen in recent championship Saturdays, I don't think we can discount anything, Alyssa, that what could happen, what could not happen. And I think a big reason why we've seen an upturn in the Big Ten, of course, number one reason is the SEC is not where it used to be. I think Nick Saban, as great as he's been, He's kind of ruined that conference because you can't keep up with him, and coaches are getting fired because you can't beat Nick Saban at Alabama. But ever since Urban Meyer got into that conference, he brought an SEC mentality saying, we're going to get rugged speed guys and bring them to Ohio State. Not to say that Ohio State didn't do that before, but more prevalent now. So now you have to keep up with him, and that's why Jim Harbaugh, he's at Michigan, where Mark D'Antonio did do at Michigan State before they had a downturn this year. Penn State, they've increased their recruiting under James Franklin. You have to be able to catch up with that team, and it seems that a lot of teams in the Big Ten are not only doing that, trying to catch up to Ohio State, but also being better in intersectional games where no one's outrunning them and leaving them in the dust. So I think that's a big reason why we've seen that uptick from the Big Ten, mainly because Urban Meyer brought that mentality in, and either you keep up or you're going to get run over by Ohio State.
Well, this renaissance has taken place in the Big Ten Conference. I mean, how much credit do you give to the coaches that have been put in place and being hired? You mentioned Urban Meyer, you know, Jim Harbaugh. They've really energized the conference.
Well, they've energized the conference, but also the quarterback play is better in college football than ever before, whether you're using a spread offense system. They're better teachers of the quarterback position than I think we've seen in college football. That is something that has really helped the Big Ten. That's not to say JT Barrett's going to be an NFL quarterback from Ohio State. I don't believe that. But he's become a really good college quarterback because he had an Urban Meyer teaching him. And before Tom Herman went to the University of Houston, he was really good at teaching quarterbacks at Ohio State as the offensive coordinator. So I think when you have those coaches who are becoming more and more rock stars in college football, whether it's Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, Florida State, mm-hmm. of course, Urban Meyer, Jim Harbaugh, but also if you have terrific quarterback play, you can be able to do some things, and those coaches are doing that a lot better than we've seen in previous years.
Okay, Freddie Coleman with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He's a little under the weather tonight, but doing a great job delivering some great information. Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio. One of the questions I wanted to ask you is, how much do conference championships, how much does that matter? I mean, what's your take on that in terms of what the committee has shown us in the past? Do they favor conference champions?
Well, I don't even think they know, Alyssa, because it seems like it changes week by week and year by year, because that's what we heard, that they were going to place a lot of a premium if you won your division or you won the conference championship. And now all of a sudden in the last 3 or 4 weeks, they've talked about we want to put the best 4 teams on the field for the playoff. Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's the way it should have been, because you can say we place a premium conference championships. But what if one conference champion is not as good as the conference champion from another league that was a better league this year? So
right.
I think they have to get away from that. I think by doing that this year, I hope that's going to be the case when they get together, put the rankings together for the playoff, because it should be the best 4 teams. And to be honest with you, Michigan is one of the best 4 teams in the country. But I don't think they're better than Washington, for example. If you put those two in the same field, in my opinion, I think Washington is a better football team, even if both of those teams are undefeated. But if one person looks at Michigan and they say, well, they were better than Ohio State, they lost on the road to an unranked Iowa team, I'll take that over a Washington team that struggled against Utah, even though Utah was ranked. They struggled against Arizona. Arizona has not had a good season, and they got blasted by USC, who right now is playing as well as anybody in the country. I think you have so many of those variables around. You can't just say, okay, a conference championship or a division championship should decide who gets into the playoff. You should go in there and say, okay, if I put those two teams together, who's better? And if your subjective mind says, I'll take that team, I can live with that. But don't change the rules week by week and year by year, because it seems as if they're trying to further an agenda for one team and against another team, or for one conference against another conference.
Alabama with the unblemished record, they're 12-0. Ohio State 11-1. Clemson 11-1. Washington 11-1. Okay, so when we start looking at these teams, Michigan, Wisconsin, Penn State, what team could, you know, ultimately knock off Alabama, because they are head and shoulders above everybody else and they've really separated themselves?
I think the one team that could do it would be Clemson, because Clemson's not afraid of them. And Clemson played them last year in the championship game and only lost by 5 points in one of the best championship games or bowl games that we've seen in recent memory. And that's not to say Ohio State can't do it, but when you have inconsistent quarterback play and you need your quarterback to win a game, I don't think JT Barrett as a quarterback would be able to do that against an Alabama defense. But that Deshaun Watson guy, that's a different cat of a different color right there, because we saw what he did last year in that championship game. And I know he's had his ups and downs this year for Clemson, and Lamar Jackson, Louisville, was first team all ACC. But Clemson believes, with their defense being a little bit better, Wayne Gallman is one of the best players in the country, a running back that nobody talks about. They're the one team that can look Alabama in the eye and say, you know what, we had you last year, we let you get away. I think that's the one team above anybody else, whether it's Ohio State, whether it's Michigan, whether it's Washington, Penn State, Oklahoma, anybody else. That'll be the one team that would say, okay, if it's 50-50, I'll give them a lot of credit. I think they'll be able to pull that off more than anybody else.
Well, the Tigers, too, they feed off their defensive coordinator, that Brent Venables. I mean, he's done an amazing job with that program.
Well, they also feed off Dabo Sweeney, the head coach, because both of those guys have great energy.
Intense, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Alyssa, you're spot on with how the intensity, but it's not a brooding intensity. It's not a booty intensity. It's the kind of intensity that you say to yourself, man, those two guys are into it. If I don't get into it, then I'm letting down my coach and I'm letting down my team. And we've seen that from Clemson time and time again. The players don't have to worry that their coach does not have their back. They don't have to worry about what Notre Dame players had to worry about this year with Brian Kelly throwing them under the bus time and time again after every loss. When they win, meaning Clemson, Dabo Sweeney gives credit to the players. When they lose, he puts it on him and the coaching staff and not on the players. You can't imagine what that does for your locker room when you know your coach is not going to go out there and put himself above everybody else. He's going to do that for you. But when things go wrong, he's going to put himself out in front to protect any kind of criticisms that may come your way as a football team in the program.
The college football conversation continues with Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio right after this quick time.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night, the fastest 2 hours in radio. And I am your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. We're going to continue our conversation talking college football with Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio. Hey, not to digress a bit, but I mean, do you ever think about, I mean, I think about my Sooners, Oklahoma, you know, they had their struggles defensively. You think there's any like regret in terms of letting Brent Venables get away and that they probably should have retained him? Or
well, there's always going to be regret when you let somebody get away because, for example, I wonder if Alabama will feel that way. Let's say if Lane Kiffin leaves and he joins Ed Orgeron as offensive coordinator at LSU, now that Ed Orgeron's the head coach, because Lane Kiffin, no matter what you think about him, he's been able to really resurrect his coaching career by what he's done at Alabama. He's really changed that offense where no matter what quarterback they've had, they've been able to be a dynamic and multiple offense that can score points in bunches or can wear you down with their physicality and take time off the clock and keep your defense on the field. So there's always going to be a little remorse because Brent Venables is highly regarded. If Clemson did not take him away from Oklahoma, probably somebody else would have been able to do the same thing. So, yeah, you have to do that. But then when you have a program like Oklahoma, you know you're going to lose coaches that are going to go somewhere else to be better coordinators or improve their position to be a head coach. Bob Stoops and Nick Saban and guys like that know that's going to happen. But that doesn't mean you don't have a lifeline and a pipeline of coaches ready to take that person's place. And look at Oklahoma's defense this year. Outside the first game against Ohio State, their defense has been pretty good all season long.
Okay, you're listening to the voice of Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio. He is always a Big E favorite right here at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We would love to connect with you. Join us at Twitter at eRadioSports, and always twice as nice. Go to podcastarena.com. That is podcastarena.com. Not only check out our program, but all of our amazing hosts right here at our network. Now, Freddie Coleman, you were just talking about Lane Kiffin, the amazing job that he has done at Alabama, and there is a new head coaching vacancy at Oregon. You think he'd fit in nicely there in the Pac-12?
Oh, he would fit perfectly there because he knows that league. When he was a head coach at USC, what he was able to do. I mean, offensive coordinator at USC as well. So he knows that league and he knows that landscape, how to recruit. And that would be very enticing to be back in the league where you got USC really starting to get things going under their coach Clay Helton and the outstanding quarterback Sam Darnold. You know Lane Kiffin would love nothing better to get back in the Pac-12 and at Oregon where they have all that Nike Field of Night money where he won't have to worry about resources or not having things available to him.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if Oregon's going to take a chance on him. And what I mean by that is, I think they have to wonder what kind of Lane Kiffin are we getting? Are we getting the guy that seemed to have revitalized his career being the offensive coordinator of Alabama? Or are we going to get the Lane Kiffin that left after 1 year Tennessee and then left in disgrace with USC? What happened getting fired on the tarmac at the airport when they lost to Arizona State? I think there's still kind of a wait see with Lane Kiffin, so I don't know if Oregon wants that kind of person. But if you want a dynamic guy that's a dynamic offensive guy, and you knew how that worked with Chip Kelly and Mike Bellotti before him, he can be very appealing, especially if you're Oregon, wanted to make sure you keep up in the arms race at the Pac-12.
What do you think is the perception of the Oregon job? Because I think, I mean, you talk about the facilities, all they have to offer, that would be just very enticing to want to be there.
So it's a great job, even though they're not in a big city, but they are the team. They are the pro team in that state. And that's why it was very strange to me why they fired Mark Helfrich, because he won 37 games in 4 years. He won 33 games in his first 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he played for a national championship against Ohio State barely 2 years ago. So So I don't think he became a dumb coach over the last couple of years, because I think they failed to realize how many injuries they had in the offensive line and the defense. And once he got his quarterback to play, the freshman quarterback, he played extremely well. It was just one of those years that everything that could go wrong did go wrong against your team. It seems to me that Oregon was looking for so many ways to move what they felt was too nice of a guy out of their program, even though Mark Helfrich grew up in that state and this was his dream job. So this is a plump job for all the resources. You can have everything at your disposal. But I just wonder how much they may regret not giving Mark Helfrich one more year, because I still think he was the right man for the job.
Okay, Freddie Coleman with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. And as since we're on topic about the Big 12 Conference, some say that there's an East Coast bias against the Pac-12. Do you agree with that, true or false? I mean, what do you think? I mean, do they get the short end of the stick?
They always do. I mean, and believe me, I'm an East Coast person, and I'm blessed that I have a chance to work a night show. I get a chance to see a lot of West Coast basketball,
sure,
West Coast
yeah.
football, and West Coast baseball. A lot of people can't stay up to watch those games. And to me, you can no longer use that as an excuse, because there's so many things available that you can watch games and see the highlights the next day and get a good idea of how good Pac-12 basketball is, Pac-12 football is. Even Big 12 schools suffer by that, because there are two time zones in a lot of places behind the East Coast time zones. So I think a lot of that is very, very valid. And when anybody says, you guys at ESPN or SB Nation, you have a bias against West Coast teams, I'm not going to say that they're lying, because plenty of us in the media that work for both our networks mm-hmm. don't get a chance to stay up and watch those teams. And I think those teams lose a lot in terms of, man. For example, I don't think people realize how good Colorado is. They're a terrific football
team. That's right, yeah.
What Mike McIntyre has been able to do, turning that program around, that was a downtrodden program before this year. But if you haven't seen them play, or you don't stay late enough on Saturday night to see them play, you don't have any idea how good that football team is. And I wonder how much of that has factored into a lot of kind of a looking sideways at Washington, because I wonder how many committee members have actually seen them play a full game outside of loss to USC.
Okay, we've hit on a lot of different storylines in college football. One that stands out, of course, is right here in the Big 12 Conference and the firing of the former head coach at the University of Texas, and that is Charlie Strong. My heart really goes out to him. I think he's such a great guy and a terrific coach, and hope he lands on his feet real soon. What was your reaction when you heard the news? Was this the right move? Did you agree with it? Did they pull the trigger too quick? What are your thoughts, Freddie?
Well, I was not surprised, because the minute that it started to go a little bit sideways for Texas, a lot of people that didn't want him there in the first place, Alyssa, this is what they wanted, to move him out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, you can't lose to Kansas. You can't have three straight losing seasons. So
yeah.
We can't just say that, okay, they should have kept Charlie Strong. I clearly understand why they made this move, because when you're Texas, you're the Kentucky of football when you think about it. Kentucky basketball, if they had those kind of seasons, there's no way a coach is going to survive that. At certain programs, you have to be a championship contender, or at least have the feeling that you are going to be a championship contender, that you're going to be in the mix for the Big 12 championship and the college football playoff. And that was not the case with Charlie Strong for 3 years. But when you had too much division, or plenty of division, where it seemed to be Charlie Strong and maybe a couple of people over here and everybody else against him on the other side, it's kind of hard to win that way, because the players understand that. The players feel that, and the players know that. So the players went out there, and even he said before the last game against TCU, guys, just go out and play. Don't worry about anything else. Don't worry about my job status. But it's hard for an 18- to 22-year-old to do that when they are saying, man, if we don't play well, that guy who we love is going to lose his job. That's no way for any 18- to 22-year-old to play in an already pressurized situation that is college football. So they got that. They believe they got the right guy in Tom Herman, and I believe that as well. But honestly, I don't think Charlie Strong had a chance when there were so many people that, A, did not want to be there, and so many people wanted him to fail anyway.
Okay, so what's going to be next for Charlie Strong?
Well, that's a good question. I could see him being a head coach maybe after the next season. I could see that.
Maybe take a year off.
Yeah, he's still highly regarded for his defensive mind, and by the way, he is a leader of men. Those are very attractive qualities, and I don't think he became a bad coach at Texas. I think that was an unwinnable situation outside of winning a national championship, because look what he did at Louisville before he got the Texas job. So we know he can coach. We know he can be a successful head coach in college football. I think the opportunity will come along, but they'll probably have to wait a year after when somebody says, I need Charlie Strong to turn around this program and clean things up.
Okay, Freddie Coleman has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Check him out. Freddie, where can our listeners even connect with you and listen to you at the late, late night?
Yeah, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Monday through Friday with me and my man Ian Fitzsimmons on ESPN Radio.
Sweet.
And also the ESPN app, and also on Twitter at ColemanESPN.
Oh, Freddie, we wish you a speedy recovery, and thank you so much for carving out some time. I know you're under the weather. Very much appreciate your insight. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure, friend. You have a great weekend as well.
You bet. Much more coming your way right here at Hour Number 1 at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You stay close.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, good evening and welcome back to the fastest 2 hours in radio. It is time to D it up. We're going to talk about the San Antonio Spurs and how the Spurs, you know what, they appear not to be affected by losing their superstar in Tim Duncan. I mean, the first 20 seasons without Tim Duncan, and you have to wonder, you know, what is it like for those guys walking into the locker room, not seeing him, just the impact that he had and leading the Spurs to all those NBA titles. I mean, the players change, but Greg Popovich still delivers. He's got his team excelling at a very high level. How does he do it? So we're going to find out. We're going to open up the Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. We're going to visit with J.R. Wilco of SB Nation. He has just released a new publication with our good friends, some of our teammates at Triumph Books, shining the spotlight on Tim Duncan. It is titled Team First Superstar. Good evening, J.R. Nice to have you on the show for the first time.
No, thanks for having me.
Okay, so before we highlight this new sleek magazine book, you put it on your coffee table, it is impressive, about Tim Duncan. Get us up to speed on the Spurs, because it seems like they're at the top of the Western Conference. What were your expectations coming into the 2016-2017 season?
Speaking as a fan of the team, I was just hoping that they wouldn't be awful, right? And that's the first thing that you think, as soon as they lose Tim Duncan. I mean, he's the best player in franchise history, you know, probably the best power forward ever, one of the top 10, maybe one of the top 5 players of all time. Teams historically just don't lose guys like this and then do well. I mean, the numbers are really, really bad. And so to be in the position to be able to be, well, not just to contend, but just to be relevant is usually the battle. But you've got Kawhi Leonard coming on. I mean, he's not even in his prime yet, but he's already got into the MVP conversation last year, and he started the season so well. They had that, they have great off season, where they have pickups of Pau Gasol, they got David Lee, but they also got some lesser known guys that are playing really good roles for him and look like they could do even better. And Davis Bertans from Latvia, who's an outside sharpshooter, has actually got some length and some athleticism, can defend the rim at times. And then you've got Dwayne Dedmon, who is really not even a factor for his team last year and picked him up, and he's playing some serious minutes and could even wind up playing a big role for them come the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, they're second best record in the West and playing some pretty good basketball right now.
And that really says something, because I have to be honest, I mean, I found it a bit surprising. I wasn't sure how things were going to work out, but they've just made an incredible transition. You know, when you lose, especially when you lose a future NBA Hall of Famer in Tim Duncan, and just the mindset of the Spurs, I mean, they did not wave the white flag and surrender their status. I mean, they still are one of the elite teams in the Western Conference. And you mentioned the arrival of Pau Gasol. I think he has just been a perfect fit and has made a very nice transition.
It's amazing to see the way that the Spurs offense has really not missed a beat at all.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, you can look and see the way that Tim Duncan, I mean, really held court on the defensive end and made the Spurs the NBA's best defensive team last year for a reason, and that was Tim Duncan. But there was a limiting effect that he had on the offense as his outside shot pretty much by that point in his career had pretty much vanished. But what's happening now with Pau Gasol and him being able to step in again without losing much of a beat at all, whenever Greg Popovich brings on someone new, he tends to limit the offense. And it was really noticeable last year in LaMarcus Aldridge's first year with the team that there were things that the Spurs usually do that they just didn't do. Mm-hmm. But even with Pau Gasol's first year in the league, first year with the team, his first season yeah. as a Spur, mm-hmm. They're doing a lot of things that the Spurs didn't do with LaMarcus Aldridge last year, just because Pau Gasol's experience is so wide. And the system that he plays with the Spanish national team is actually quite Spurs-like. So he's picking up, you know, right where they would have left off, even though he's a new addition to the team.
He is the editor-in-chief of PoundingTheRock.com. PoundingTheRock.com. We're talking about SB Nation's San Antonio Spurs blog, J.R. Wilco. First time on the show tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, providing some great information on his San Antonio Spurs. And as we zero in on Pau Gasol, I mean, yeah, he doesn't post big, sexy stats, but he understands, J.R., he understands his role and where he's at this point in the career and why he came to San Antonio, and that's why he's making a difference.
I have to agree with you, and he's saying all of the right things as you would expect.
Total professional,
right? I mean,
yes.
Yeah, I mean it's Greg Popovich's team, right? And so that's his way or the highway. Even for a pro that has as much experience in the league and in the world as Pau Gasol.
We are shining the spotlight on the San Antonio Spurs. We're visiting with the editor-in-chief of PoundingTheRock.com. That is SB Nation's San Antonio Spurs blog. You got to check it out. J.R. Wilco with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You know, it's interesting, as you look at the roster, not only this year, but throughout the years, why is it that the Spurs seem to have a love affair with foreign-born players? Because it seems like their roster, you know, always has that, a good combination.
You know, it's a good point. I think that they really started the whole look at Europe and looking outside the borders with real serious intent. You know, there were some guys that would come over, but it was few and far between. And a lot of times, like with Arvydas Sabonis, pretty much at the end of the career by the time they actually made it to the NBA. And if you remember at the beginning of, Tony Parker's career, 2002 and the beginning of Manu Ginobili with 2002-2003, mm-hmm. There was still a big knock on European guys. They didn't think that they were tough. You could push them around. They didn't have much of a game. You know, that they would just come to the NBA and wilt. And Manu Ginobili in a lot of ways changed that, because guys would just beat on him and he would just pop right back up and get to the line, hit his free throws, and get knocked down again. And things started changing over the years, and a lot of teams started. You just look at the NBA draft today and see how many players are coming from no kinds of U.S. experience whatsoever. And the Spurs, you know, and Greg Popovich and R.C. Buford did a fantastic job of doing that. They've got a very, very developed a community of coaches. They go over to Europe regularly and give lectures, Popovich and Buford as well, talking about the way that the Spurs put things together, their mindset, their attitude, and just giving just giving to them and not just taking, the way that you would expect if you're just calling somebody up and asking for information, right? The relationship's there and you get a lot more from them.
Okay, the San Antonio Spurs, that's what we're talking about right now with J.R. Wilco, the editor-in-chief of PoundingTheRock.com, SB Nation's San Antonio Spurs blog. The Spurs right now, 15-4. What's been going on at home? Because they've had some home losses that are a bit uncharacteristic.
I would agree with that. I'm not sure that there is anything going on at home. They started the season without Danny Green, who had a hamstring injury at the end of the preseason. So he's only played about half of the games so far. And three of those losses were also without Tony Parker, who in the season opener, in the blowout victory the Spurs had over the Golden State Warriors on opening night, he hurt his ankle or leg as well. And so he was trying to work through that during that time, and they realized that he couldn't play through it. They pulled him out. And so three of the four losses were not a full strength. That said, the Spurs just aren't shooting as well at home. But it's one of those examples of small sample size theater, really. In four games, I'm not sure that we're seeing a trend at this point. And frankly, I expect things to even out as the season wears on.
Hey, we're hooping it up, talking about the San Antonio Spurs with SB Nations. That's right, the editor-in-chief of PoundingTheRock.com. That is the Spurs blog with J.R. Wilco tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We will be right back after this quick timeout. Listen anytime, anywhere for your Android or iOS device. All of your favorite SB Nation shows live and on demand right from your smart device. You can search SB Nation Radio in the iOS or Google Play Store. And if you don't have an Android or iOS device, you can stream us on most smart devices at sbnationradio.com.
I don't want to know who's taking you home. I'm loving you so.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. The NBA conversation continues. That's right, we are shining the spotlight on the San Antonio Spurs. We're visiting with the editor-in-chief of PoundingTheRock.com, that is SB Nation's San Antonio Spurs blog. You got to check it out. J.R. Wilco is with us tonight. Okay, so J.R., what do you think the mindset needs to be in terms of with the fans? Should they be patient this season? I mean, what are we talking about? Is this a championship roster? What does your gut tell you?
First of all, it's the Spurs, right? So Spurs fans, I think, are pretty used to being able to take a breath through any weirdness that seems to be going on, right? I mean, the team always has its eyes set on a championship, and the fact that we can even talk about whether or not they're a championship team this year,
that's incredible,
without it being a foregone conclusion, exactly.
Yes.
Right? It's incredible. You lose Tim Duncan and you're still having this conversation. It's amazing. Secondly, I think you've got to look at the overall NBA landscape. I mean, you've got an incredible team in the Golden State Warriors, who have only lost two games so far this year and are the league's best record in the West. They loom, you know, pretty large out there, but I don't think that they're quite the absolute 100% lock that that everyone was calling them when they first got Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the potential that they have for not really being able to play defense at the same level, or if they're able to play at the same level with the same people, right? Because we're talking about the Spurs, who are one of the few teams that can actually look to punish them for going small, because the entire rest of the league is trying to go small as well. You know, it's a copycat league.
Yep.
And when the Warriors won going small, then there you are. So I think that there's a potential for there to be a bit. Frankly, I think the Spurs match up better with the Warriors than even they might with the Clippers, frankly. There's just no one for Kawhi Leonard to guard when you play L.A., and so kind of dodging them might actually be more beneficial than worrying about Golden State at this point. So are they a championship team? It's hard to say. I think they probably need to put a pause on that until after the Rodeo road trip, which is usually when Popovich starts to finalize the rotation,
yeah.
Right? So we're talking about another 30, 40, 45 games here from this point before you really start looking at that. But the fact that they're in the conversation at all is usually the kind of thing that that makes Spurs fans smile pretty big.
Who has stepped up in the leadership role and been perhaps that, Timmy D, like that quiet leader that everyone responds to and respects? Who is filling that void?
Well, we've just seen a lot from Kawhi Leonard, frankly, the quietest Spur, right? The the guy that doesn't want to give the interview, the guy with the five or six word interview question answers. But he's just taking a lot of guys aside. He's being way more vocal in timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to Pop and telling him what he wants. And Pop has recently come out and talked a lot about this and seeing the way that he is developing as a leader, well, frankly, it's a lot like the way that Duncan was, because Duncan didn't do a whole lot of talking. Duncan famously didn't talk to Tony Parker for his entire first season with the Spurs. They keep on saying that amongst themselves, whether it's literally didn't talk to him or just, didn't spend a whole lot. I mean, it seems weird that there could be a year. But this is earlier. This is way before Tim was Tim, way before, the Spurs culture was the Spurs culture, right? It was still kind of in its infancy. And so it seems plausible that weird things like that could happen, right? But Tim Duncan wasn't always the guy that was putting the arm around everybody. He was very stoic and very, if not standoffish, then at least hard to reach. And the fact that we think about people stepping into his shoes, yeah, those were shoes that he eventually got to. But he wasn't always the guy standing there at underneath the basket waiting for everyone to come off the court so that he could be the last guy off the court. He didn't always do that. And so I think Kawhi is finding his way into that role. His sixth year in the league, I mean, he's got, I mean, that's on a lot of teams, that's the most tenured guy, right? And the fact that, you know, that he's able to do that, right, is huge. But also the fact that Manu Ginobili didn't retire, right? I don't think that can be overstated at this point, because losing so much of what Greg Popovich calls corporate knowledge would have been a massive blow, losing Duncan and Ginobili together. But Ginobili's always there ready to explain, and his understanding of the game is such that, you know, the few players are able to match just the angles and the things that he sees. So you've definitely got Ginobili and Parker as well. It's not all on Kawhi, but Kawhi's definitely coming along.
Okay, J.R. Wilco with us a few more minutes at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Tell us about the new book, Tim Duncan, Team First Superstar. What can all of our listeners look forward to?
Well, we've got 19 years worth of just amazing play packed into this volume. And I got to say, that it was one of the things that I always wanted to do from just being a kid in junior high, sixth or seventh grade, and going, I'd love to have a book someday. I'd love to put my name on a book. I'd love to be able to do that someday. And to get to that point is pretty awesome. And the subject matter is just, you know, without parallel, right? I mean, you're talking about just the legend of San Antonio. You're talking about watching, going back and reviewing all of the games, all the great games that he had. We've got articles from all of Pounding the Rock's best writers. I wrote the intro and just enjoyed putting it together so much. And the group at Triumph and the way that they produce stuff is fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yep, and the pictures that they chose were phenomenal. I love the way that we were able to put together the cover and the back cover as well. It's just really well done, and it's just if I may say so, having something to do with it, I think it's a gorgeous piece of work, and like you said, great for a gift for the holidays, for sure.
Well, a lot for our listeners to look forward to. We're getting ready to wrap up our interview, but give us an update on Tim. I mean, what is he doing now?
Well, you know, he's showing up to practice every now and again.
What?
Yeah, he's at practice.
Maybe he's just going to take a year off.
Oh, my goodness. No, they're retiring his number December 18th. after a game against the Boston Celtics.
The title of J.R. Wilco's new book is Tim Duncan, Team First Superstar. Congratulations on that. Happy holidays. J.R., you are a fantastic guest. We had to do two segments with you, and we look forward to another visit real soon.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.